Hildegard Westerkamp, when I sit looking at you at this lovely table in Vancouver, British Columbia, I have a keen sense that you're looking at my ears. You're a composer. And I don't think of composers as going out to change the world, but that's a large part of what you looking at my ears are about, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. Actually, looking at ears was something that I was preoccupied when I was an editor of the Soundscape newsletter. I thought, wouldn't it be great to photograph as many people's ears as possible?
Now, that's about as unlikely as going out and photographing feet, isn't it?
Well, a friend of mine said, you can't do that. That's too intimate. Which I thought was an interesting comment. And it was always a little bit strange to.
Yeah.
It's like doing a deep portrait in a way, because people didn't really know what I was photographing.
Uh-huh.
Right? We don't know our own ears. We don't really know what they look like.
Well, most people cover them either with hats or with hair or whatever.
That's true. And I can't see my own ears, so
as
I'm photographing something that the person that I'm photographing really doesn't know anything about.
Well, and now that is a very big statement that you just blasted past, isn't it? Our ears are something about which we don't know very much.
Well, you remind me, too. I mean, we're accustomed to looking in people's eyes and reading people through their eyes. And I think you have a slightly different perspective on that.
Well, of course, I'm not really talking about looking at ears. I don't usually look at people's ears.
I was kidding.
So was I in a way. But actually, when I began to look at ears, I thought, what an amazingly complex, outwardly amazingly complex organ it is. And we're not talking even about the inside of that ear. Mm-hmm. Just looking at the particular physicality of an ear is giving me a sense that each one of us is listening in a different way, because we have a different shape, so that the sounds will enter our ear canal, especially the high frequency sounds, in completely different ways, so that we, you know, localize sounds differently. High frequency sounds always give us a sense where we are in space, because they're so clearly identifiable from where they come from. And the high frequencies are also very small sound waves. Here I'm getting right into technicality.
That's okay.
That the outer part of the ear will receive them and guide them.
The
into
high frequencies?
Our, yeah.
You mean like a little funnel? Like
in
a little
in
traffic
a way,
cop?
In a way, if you have an ear that sticks out more, your ear would collect those, as particularly those sounds, in quite different ways. And to me, just that thought alone is interesting. It's to me symbolic to the fact that we are all perceiving sounds completely differently, even though as a community or as a culture we also have similar perceptions of sound. We're culturally conditioned or environmentally conditioned, so we'll perceive the sounds in particular ways in Europe and in Japan in very different ways again.
Would I be right to say most people have never thought of this? I first in line.
Many people don't think about that. It's something that we take for granted, that our ears are simply there and they receive, and we may or may not be conscious of what goes in there.
So we all hear differently, and cultures have a different set of sounds, a different sense of place? Say some more about this. This is a brand new thought to me.
Well, cultures have a different, each culture will have a different attitude towards their own environment and how to deal with it. And so each culture will perceive sounds in very different ways.
And does it actually have different sounds too?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, if I go to India, I hear a whole lot more street vendors than I hear here in Vancouver. In fact, I hear none here in Vancouver unless I go to Chinatown, which is again, a symbol of another culture.
Which is part of why you'd go to Chinatown, so that you could be in a different sound space.
Of course. And then we have temple bells in India. We have all sorts of religious sounds that we don't have in Vancouver. We have religious sounds in Europe that are very different from other religious sounds. So there is a huge spectrum
of the actual sounds. But you were saying something bigger than that. You were saying that cultures treat sound differently, weren't you?
Well, I would say that we all perceive sounds in very different ways, depending on how we're conditioned. I'm just sort of groping for an example. There's probably oodles of them, but I'm giving so many workshops on this stuff that at this moment it will come.
Yes.
I just can't think of a concrete example. Uh-huh. But let's take the temple bells. I mean, it's a very interesting example to me. In India, I was asking in a workshop, when do the temple bells ring in this during the day?
Uh-huh.
And I never got a clear answer, and I could not understand why, because I come from a German background where the Protestant church bells and the Catholic church bells rang at very particular times.
Ring the hours.
Especially, or they would be ringing Saturday afternoon at 6 o'clock. They ring in the Sunday. That's a big tradition over there. So I was coming from that. Here they hardly ring at all. We hardly have any.
Uh-huh.
Well, so finally we went to temples, and I realized that they are rung by the people who enter the temple in the Hindu religion.
Oh.
So in the Hindu religion, the people come to the temple, ring the bell in order to wake up the gods to be ready for worship. Mm-hmm. In the Christian religion, the church rings the bell to gather the congregation to come to the worship,
which to me
is a huge difference.
You have just answered a long-standing question. I think this is part of what you're saying. In India, I was always amazed that I could never find out what time the trains left. If I ask a dozen officials what time the train left, I would get a dozen different answers.
Yes.
And I think this is what you're saying. Our sense of time is predicated, at least substantially, partially, and perhaps substantially, and not to say totally, on acoustic cues.
Mm-hmm. So very you ring so. The bell and the train comes? Is that what you're suggesting, Bill?
No, but culturally,
there's a certain goal orientation there that is underlying that, I think. That we want to get somewhere, and in order to do that, we have to know exactly when and where and what. In India, I've always perceived it as the present is the most important in life.
Mm-hmm.
So the process of living is always in the present. So if you get anywhere, it will happen at one point, but it will not happen in a predetermined way.
Mm-hmm.
And it may also be, you may end up in a different place, but you've arrived in the present again.
Mm-hmm.
So this, of course, I found incredibly interesting, because in a way, that's exactly what you do when you're listening. When you're perceiving the world through the ear, you are inside the soundscape. You are always listening to the present. And I think in Western culture, we tend to overhear in a way. We are always, well, I'm using it in a different sense. We're always sort of skipping over the present because we're listening to the voices or to the commands that tell us that we have to be somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly
internal and external commands,
exactly.
Whether it's the bells or your own sense of urgency to be someplace on time.
Exactly.
Well, and we have a sense of making progress, and progress, of course, tends to focus you on the future.
Right? And you're saying all of this has something to do with sound?
Well, very much so, because when you, if we would now, in the radio program, ask the listeners to listen to everything that goes on while we are talking in their home or in their car, and begin to listen to the present, the acoustic present that they're in. It's a little bit like meditating, because you're then removing yourself from the thoughts of where you have to get to and what you have to do. You're actually allowing the present to exist, and you're actually acknowledging and said, yes, I hear you. And so say someone, one of your listeners is listening to this in the car right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would encourage that listener to listen to the motor itself, how much of the motor is audible inside the car, how much is coming from the outside, and how much does the sound play, how much of a role does the sound play in orienting the person in space.
Mm-hmm.
If I was, if one of your listeners was at home listening, then I would say, well, what are the other sounds in the home? Are there voices? Is there a fridge? Is there heating? Is there any sound coming from the outside? Are
TV
there wind
in the
sounds?
Other room.
TV in the other room. Mm-hmm. Is there water running? What do you hear of your neighbors?
Can you hear your own head?
Well, exactly, and that all those sounds inform us about where we are.
So you're talking about a sense of place,
yes,
aren't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, very much so.
But it's acoustical. place?
Well, I think acoustics and sound give us very much a sense of place, because I can always only say it's almost like being in water. We're inside the sound waves. Mm-hmm. They are touching us all the time. So we are in that environment. And in a way, there's a comfort around that, that we know where we are. I have to think of blind people. That's how they orient mm-hmm. themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the only way they can, well, with touch. But
well, and the fear of being deaf.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Which means that you don't know. You're not oriented. You don't know where you are.
Very interesting. Very interesting. We're going to be back shortly with Hildegard Westerkamp, and I want to go out with a thought we'll come back with. Ears, bodies, and psyches are what are involved in the process of a soundscape. We're coming back to Vancouver with Hildegard Westerkamp. I'm Paula Gordonville. Russell is with me. We'll be right back with The Paula Gordon Show.